welcome everyone to our second episode of the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Up and In. We're going to call this episode 2.0, even though we never did an episode 1. In our minds, 0.9 is now episode 1. Going to have a good show for you today. I'm going to say it every time we start, but I'm never going to say we have a bad show. But we're going to be talking a lot about umpiring today and some particular things with umps that have been happening at the big league level last week. And we're also going to bring in some other people from Baseball Perspectives to talk about. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter and other places about just the concept of replacing umpires, especially the home plate umpire, the balls and strikes counts with some sort of computerized thingy. So we'll talk about that a lot more. We'll go over, we got some emails to read from people who were...
We have some mails on the show today.
Mails, and we'll talk about those. I'm Kevin Goldstein with Baseball Perspectives. With me, as you already heard, the dulcet tones of my partner in crime, Jason. Jason Park, say hello to the internet.
Howdy.
There you go. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
And so get some housekeeping out of the way. If you want to email us, it's podcast@baseballperspectives.com, and you can tell us how great we are, how horrible we are, or as we'll hear soon, it's how Jason does have some really bad ideas about things.
And yeah, indeed.
Right, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Kevin_Goldstein. Jason is at Professor Parks. That is false advertising. He is not a professor.
I'm a professor of good looks. Charm.
Like I said, he is not a professor. And if you want to, you can leave us a voicemail on Skype if you're one of those Skype people and just call look for me or my username King Clip-On. And if you know what that's a reference to, we'll give you bonus points. I'm not going to tell you.
I don't know.
I'm not going to tell you.
I'm going to look it up.
You might not find it.
I'm going to look it up right now and ruin everybody's good time.
Okay, well, let's go through. Really pleased with the feedback on the first episode, especially since, you know, we don't have an RSS feed. Well, we didn't. We have an RSS feed now. You're going to see a link when you see this podcast go up. We're not on iTunes yet, but we've been submitted to iTunes. So currently we need to get approved, which I think involves Steve Jobs downloading and listening to the podcast at least once. But we still heard from a lot of people. We're very big. I'll let you know this right now, Jason. The Midwest League loves us.
Oh, good. Great.
I heard from Nathan Beliva, who is the longtime broadcaster of the Peoria Chiefs. He's been there like 8 years. Was happy to hear we had a podcast, downloaded it, give him something to listen to on the bus. And yesterday I went to a game with Kane County and Wisconsin. I'll talk more about that later when we get into the what we're watching thing. But I was just – I went to the press box room to get my rosters and my lineups and all that good crap.
Show off.
And Jeff Hem, who does the play-by-play for the Kane County Cougars and does some sports radio around here, great guy. I just saw me and said, Kevin, love the podcast. So
hey, bueno.
We're huge in the Midwest League. But we also got some emails, and we're going to go over a couple of those. Especially since we're going to start with the one that rips into Jason.
And,
this from MJ, and the first thing says is, I am the first member of the Vin Scully fan club. He's the Coltrane of baseball broadcasting, and there is no Miles Davis. Jason is a bleeping idiot for not possessing a full appreciation of his greatness. And Jason, it should be noted, is back at his lovely apartment in Brooklyn, New York, no longer in Mexico. So now Jason has no excuse not to follow his assignment and watch a complete Dodgers game with Vin Scully doing the broadcast, and then he'll come around.
Right. Okay. First of all, that's the great Mike Hindman who sent that in. And second of all, I suggested that we put a Vin Scully mask on a woman or a man in order to be intimate with that. So that's love. That's appreciation. So, Mike, no.
But nonetheless, you said you hadn't watched a game for a while.
I mean, I haven't. That is true. I don't watch a lot of Dodgers games because, you know.
I think you need, it's like relisting this to Sgt. Pepper's if you're some sort of Beatles sucker. You have to do it
once. Okay, yeah. Let's open that again because Sgt. Pepper's is a great album.
It's not their best album.
No, it's not a piece of crap. It's a great album.
Well, I didn't say it was a piece of crap. I said it was a piece of garbage.
Okay. Well, it's not. It's a beautiful album. It's not their best album.
You're one of those Revolver guys, aren't you?
I'm a big Revolver guy. Yeah.
See, I'm a big
Revolver guy. Right. I'm a big Revolver guy. I think that's their best album.
So our good friend Mike goes on, and this is where he's really right. Kevin, thank you for setting Jason straight. On weed.
Not really.
On on we. If they hire you, it's we. You write about them. When you're writing about them, it's they.
I wasn't writing about them. I was talking about them.
I think so, it still applies.
It doesn't apply. No, it doesn't. It
does apply.
No, and he's a lawyer, and he's going to lose on this, and maybe he can call in, but it's not a radio show, so we can't.
You never know. We might do a live show one day.
I wouldn't.
But he's right. And unless you play for the team, unless you are collecting coin, unless you get a check from that has the team logo and name in the upper left-hand corner, you're not we.
It's we.
They are they. It's disturbing fanboyism.
Well, yeah, I'll take that. Sure.
you're just gonna take it.
Well, it deflates your argument a little, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. Because you're just saying I you're accepting your wrongness instead of addressing it.
No. It's we. You want to call, you don't have a team.
How do you know?
Well, you don't have a team. You don't have a we. You want a we. You're a they. I'm a Wii.
I own a Wii. I play Super Mario Brothers on it.
I figured you'd play some sort of, you know, anime game that requires you to use a headset and, you know, walkie-talkies or something.
Oh, no, the key to the fine Japanese video game. The reason Japanese video games tend to be far superior to anything American is that they are single-player experiences.
Elitist.
So you don't go online and deal with people you don't like. Okay, let's move on. Because I'm gonna quit while I'm ahead on that one. I got another email from Brandon, and Brandon starts with by saying, "I know nothing of Abraham Cruz Villegas and Gabriel Orozco, but I made it to the end of the podcast. What's that worth? As far as I'm concerned, that's worth a lot, because
it means a lot. Not be worth a lot, but it means a lot.
We're both very touched, and I heard from a few people who got all the way through, which shocked me, because when I was editing this thing on Friday, exactly, I knew you wouldn't listen. I was just surprised it was 90 minutes, but I was kind of happy about that.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping this one was more like 14 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, but that's why we're going to be trying out new hosts later in the summer.
Good.
He also talked about, I'd like to see, this is, now we're going to support Jason. Jason, we're going to bring you back up after tearing you apart.
Oh, yeah, I was so low.
I'd like to hear the next podcast with Jason Parks picking the bumper music. Not that Naked Ray Gun was bad, just interested in the compare and contrast of your musical tastes.
Good.
Yeah, now, we've gone back and forth on the Beatles, and we disagree on other bands as well. But I think Jason, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jason has a more...
I have better taste than you.
It's a more melodic taste in music. It's a more wimpy, if you will, taste in music.
It's a more intellectual, a little more.
It's a little. It's
artistic,
a little
more.
A little,
you know,
weaker in the spine.
It's a little more, you know, handsome.
None of these things are true. And Brandon goes on, I enjoyed the roughness of the first podcast as you guys work out your chemistry. That was worth a few chuckles.
Our chemistry.
Right. Looking forward.
That's the only thing we have going for us.
Exactly. If you enjoyed the roughness of the first podcast, believe me, you're going to enjoy the roughness of the 53rd podcast. It's not really. This is not going to be some smooth thing, and we're not going to sound like.
It's not going to get better.
Right. We're not going to be Vin Scully in a year or anything like that. Looking forward to more. Stay pretentious, Brandon.
Okay, that's the comment. Towards you, I think.
I'll take it. I'm fine. If you want to call, I'm totally cool with being called pretentious, and I think you are too. And
my taste suggests as much. I don't know what.
Yeah, your tastes are very pretentious, actually. I mean, it's more pretentious than mine, even.
Yeah, I mean, it's taste.
Right. But yeah, you're very obsessed with your taste being seen as really smart and
I don't care what it's seen as. I'm just telling you what it is, and don't. Okay, you're playing the hipster card. I see.
You do.
I live in Brooklyn. I'm a hipster because, you know.
You live in Brooklyn. You got the beard thing you wear.
I don't have a beard. I have a mustache. I shaved it.
It's the shirts thing the shirts you wear.
What shirt? You mean clean?
You got a collection of hipster shirts. You need to admit
that. No, I do not.
Yeah, your classic kind of your secondhand store button-up shirt.
Oh, shit! You haven't even seen my collection of shirts. First of all, that's the first thing.
I've seen enough of your shirts.
You've seen what, two or three of my shirts? Two?
I've seen enough. I got you pegged, and you're just upset about it.
You want to talk about your Kangles?
I'm fine with the hat. The hat isn't some sort of hipster.
Nobody else is fine with the hat.
Which makes the hat even cooler, because I'm not doing it for some sort of hipster cred like you are with the shirts.
What shirt? I wore a button-up shirt, and it was clean. It wasn't tucked in.
Yeah, you're
good. Is that making a hipster?
There's 8 million reasons you're a hipster.
That's ridiculous. That's just downright rude.
Should we talk about baseball at some point?
I haven't really seen any.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the week and something you want to talk to. We're going to get into this subject, I think, a lot more deeper later when we get to the big issue. But there's been a lot of ump stuff going on this week. And you started with Carl Crawford and the strikeouts, and then yesterday Mark Burley in the box. And what's going on?
I don't care about the box. I don't care. What I've been, you know, really interested in is, you know, as you mentioned, this removal of the human element as far as the balls and strikes go. And, you know, when Joe Maddon was ejected the other day, they basically asked him, you know, why were you ejected? What happened? Did you bump the ump or whatever? And, you know, he said, I was arguing balls and strikes. You know, he'd get ejected for that. And it I haven't been seeing a lot of baseball. I've been down in Mexico watching Mexican League baseball, which doesn't really count. And, you know, I saw some highlights on SportsCenter, and, you know, I went online and I saw some of the conversations on Twitter and whatnot. And, you know, people seem to be, you know, lighting the torches over this. And it's interesting because I'm a hypocrite when it comes to this, because I don't think that I don't like the thought of removing the human element from baseball. You know, I really enjoy that. But, and here's where I might be called a hypocrite. I'm for a consistent in-game strike zone. Now, I don't care if an ump is calling, a pitch that's 5 inches outside a strike all night. Call it all night. You know, be consistent. You know, that allows the players to adjust and work within the framework of that zone, of the established zone for that game. Now, when you're being inconsistent inning to inning, you're not giving the players a chance to adjust their game. You're taking that away from them, and you're making the game too much about your, you know, subjective taste, whatever. Now, in that regard, I don't think that they need to, you know, take the call away from the umpire, but just make them more accountable. And I'm for the accountability, but I'm not for removing the human element to the game. I'm actually kind of baffled that people want to do that. I'm not into I don't see the need for that type of precision in a game like baseball. And for me, baseball, the human element of baseball is what makes it such a great sport, you know. And if you're going to start with balls and strikes, you might as well, you know, just replace the fielders, because they make errors, you know, and we don't want that, you know. So
yeah, I know what you're saying. But say you. No, I know what you're saying. I agree with most of what you're saying. I certainly
the still, automatons that went too far. You think?
No, I don't want. No, I do want human umpires, and I do want humans calling balls and strikes. And I do.
What about the human league? You probably don't like them.
I would like to. I want to keep feeling fascination. And come on, that was a human league reference. Give me some credit there.
I'm actually surprised that you would go there, because I know how you feel. I know how you get, you know, sensitive about that.
No, I'm not. See, I'm not a hipster who worries about how people think I'm cool all the time.
That's right. Yeah, because I'm concerned.
Right. It's not something I wake
when you,
up.
When you look like I do, you don't have to be concerned.
You do. That's why you build all of this other stuff around it with the shirts and right. The music.
The shirts. The shirts.
But back to the ridiculous.
No, no, first of all, we need to get into this one more time. The shirts is ridiculous. This is a new one for you. This is low for even you.
I can go lower, but that's fine. I mean, you do have hipster shirts. It's just something you need to wake up.
Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take pictures of every article of clothing I have. And we're going to go over my shirts in a video podcast.
Well, you just take pictures. We'll put them on the blog post for the podcast, and the readers can judge.
Okay.
But back to the umps. I do think we need human umps. I would like to see the strike zone consistently applied, even across umps, as best as possible. But I don't. I agree with you on the human factor. And I want to tell a quick anecdote. And we talked about this off the podcast. I was going to say off air, whatever you want to call that. I think is at least rung for me. You might think I'm a moron for believing this, but I was at a game last night. We're not going to get about who was pitching or anything, but the pitcher was having command problems. And to one batter, he went, fastball outside, slider outside, fastball outside. So he's down 3-0. Then he throws a fastball, and I'm right behind home plate. We're all right behind home plate. It certainly looked like a strike to me. It looked like he caught the outside part of the plate. The ump called a ball. Guy went to first base. Scout turns to me and says, when he's missing outside that far, he's never going to get that pitch. And I nodded my head. And you know what? I was totally cool with that. I don't think he should get that pitch. Now, in your little perfect computer world, he gets that pitch.
Uh-oh.
But I'm fine with him not getting that pitch. I'm fine with the reverse as well, with, the 0-2 curveball that simply breaks a lot and might not be a strike, but it sure looks good, and the ump ringing a guy up. I'm fine with that kind of almost momentum style of umpiring, where pitchers earn a bigger, smaller strike zone. And I think it's part of the game. And I think to go to some sort of laser-defined strike zone would change the game dramatically, and I just don't see how it's necessarily for the better. But I think, I don't even know how it would change the game. I don't know if it would make pitchers suddenly the most dominant things on earth or hitters the most dominant things on earth. But I do think the effect, just the statistical effect on offense, would be really dramatic. Because it's not how guys play the game right now. They play baseball the way baseball is played right now. And I think an exact perfect strike zone would make some players suddenly much better and some players much worse. But more importantly, just change the game.
Yeah, I agree. Good call.
So we're going to talk about this later. We're going to bring in Tommy Bennett later. And Tommy's on our side. And we're going to bring in Colin Wires, who is not on our side. But the other thing I wanted to go over as far as things we've been watching is the fact, I went to a game yesterday, a minor league game. And I was watching Eric Arnett pitch. And Eric Arnett is a right-hander for the Brewers. He was their first-round pick last year. And you got almost $1.2 million, college product, University of Indiana. It's in low A. Normally you'd expect a college guy in low A to tear it up, and he has been horrible. And, watching him at times was almost uncomfortable because he's clearly kind of battling himself and battling his mechanics. And, he's the exact opposite of straight to the plate. He's kind of circular to the plate, if you will. The front foot's all over the place. There's kind of a dead point in his delivery, and he loses the leverage that he needs, and his velocity's off, and all sorts of command problems. And during this, I saw the value watching him pitch. I learned as much, I thought, at times when he wasn't pitching as when he was, because you could see him getting angry. You could see him slapping his ball at the throws that came back, slapping his glove at the throws came back. You could see him like stepping off the mound and staring at the sky. You could see him mumbling to himself, and just the overall experience made me rethink, or think more at least, or value more actually seeing a guy in person. And there's a lot of people out there. I'm going to make enemies right now.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. There's a lot of people out there.
Like Kevin Goldstein.
Not like me. There's a lot of people out there who just kind of scout by video. And, they watch a grainy YouTube video of some guy pitching and write 1,700 words on it. And it's a huge mistake. And you're going with 10% of what you could know. Which is, one of the reasons I go to games, and just more importantly, talk to people who go to games. And, I get this a lot. And so, how can you write a scouting report on that guy? You never saw him. Well, he was in California League, so I never saw him. But, I found multiple professional people, talent evaluators, who saw him, and I talked to them and got their opinion. And that I think that's more important. I honestly, I would hope that our readers would rather have me distill the opinions of four professional scouts on a guy than want me to fly out to California one day and see him once and tell you what I thought. Because believe me, that those are much better opinions overall. But I think there's a lot of stuff going on right now, especially with pitchings and pitching mechanics, where we're just like watching a grainy video and more often than not
slowing it down,
making a call on the bad side, where we're saying this guy's gonna break. Because when he breaks, then you can go, look, told you so. Aren't I the smartest guy in the world? I see very few people showing some guys delivering, going, yeah, he's fine. He's never going to get injured. You know, no one's doing that.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at a pitcher, you know, I like to look at him from different angles. And if he has, you know, really sloppy mechanics, I like to look at his body and his athleticism to see if adjustment is possible. I mean, that's the key to this. I mean, you see a lot of these guys talking about the guys coming into the draft and how they are mechanically inconsistent and their mechanics are, you know, could be a red flag going forward. Well, you know what? I mean, is their athleticism a red flag? Can they make adjustments? I mean, you're kind of putting a guy at the mercy of, you know, suspect coaching in some regard. And, you know, you're really discounting the role that adjustment plays in pitching. You have to constantly make adjustments. And, you know, that's what I look for. If you're watching a 30-second clip of some random game and you're slowing it down and studying how, you know, how high the elbow comes up, you know, if, or, you know, the action and,
or the inverted W. Ooh. Yeah,
right. You're making this proclamation about, you know, 30 seconds of film that, you know, yeah, sure. And it could represent his entire body of work. That's it's likely, but that doesn't mean that he's not able to make adjustments, that he's always going to be mechanically inconsistent. And saying that he's going to break is not exactly, you know,
it doesn't take a lot of balls to say
that. It doesn't, because you know what? Most people are going to break down at some point, and then you can go, aha, aha. But you know, what does that mean? That you slowed some film down and you can say that a guy, you know, is hyperabduction, or that he's got the inverted W? I mean, what is that? I mean, who gives? It's. I don't find that important at all. And when I scout a pitcher, I don't look for that. I will make note of his mechanics, but I'm not going to go crazy on that, because those kind of things can be adjusted. You know what can't be adjusted? When a guy's throwing 86 and, you know, he can't locate the strike zone, or he can't spin a breaking ball. I mean, those are the kind of things that are harder to fix. You know, a guy who's throwing 86 with nothing is not going to be throwing 99, you know, a couple of months later with an adjustment, or at least I don't think he will.
If that happens,
that's great. But I haven't heard of it.
No, I mean, Steven Strasburg didn't get drafted out of high school because he was fat and in the upper 80s.
Right. He was fat.
You know, right. And so, but, I mean, I agree with you what you're saying. And I honestly just kind of, I look for it to look consistent and easy. And you know what easy, what I mean by easy. You don't want to see the guy grunting. You don't want it to look difficult for him.
It depends. I mean, I don't really mind him being a max effort guy if he's a max effort pitcher. You know, and it depends on his body. It depends on his role. I mean, but yeah, I do know what you're saying in the sense that, you know, I like to see a very loose arm because it gives me, you know, depending on his age, if there's going to be any velocity in his future. I like to see a fast arm. I like to see a clean arm action. But, you know, if it's not clean and there's a lot of moving parts, well, you know, it just depends on his, you know, professional instruction, how he takes to it, how his body adjusts, what adjustments he can make, you know, going forward. I don't like to look at his mechanics as the end-all be-all of a pitcher.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, I just think if we were just, and not even that far, but if we went back 7 years, I think I have
70 years.
No, just seven. And people were looking at, you know, tapes of Felix, of a 17-year-old Felix Hernandez pitching in the Northwest League. They'd be all over it. They would talk about how brutal his mechanics are. Mm-hmm. And how he's, and if you watch him now, I don't think anyone would want a guy to throw like that. You know,
well, it works for him. I mean, exactly. Everybody's body is different.
Do you really want to tinker with that or mess with that and risk not having Felix Hernandez anymore?
Well, you could flip it around too. I mean, like, it's not as dangerous, but look at like hitting mechanics. I mean, a guy like Jeff Bagwell coming up now, you'd fix it.
Julio Franco's bat rap.
Yeah, you would fix things like this, but if it works, you don't fix it. You know, I mean, results will carry you for a while, and you don't tinker with something that's not broken.
Yeah. I actually, you said something that I wish it was much smarter than I put it, and which is rare. And,
oh my God.
But I'm going to use it. I'm going to steal it from you. Just, which is, a pitcher is not just his mechanics, and I think that's where a lot of people have gone. Where, right. You know, you look at the grainy YouTube, and that's how you judge the pitcher.
And all, like, and all of a sudden, you're making it grainy. That's funny. That's, I like that, though.
They tend to be grainy. I've seen people point at these videos, and I'm like, you know, okay, you're 10 rows behind home plate. You're like about 20 feet to the right, and you know, I got the camera's like auto focusing.
You're using a Super 8 camera.
Using a Super 8 camera, which is auto focusing on the screen instead of the pitcher. And well, look at this. The guy's going to break. People are getting so kind of overly – they don't care anymore about what's coming out of the guy's hand. Like, doesn't that matter? No, he's going to break. But
– it's – you know what? I'm not going to knock all these guys.
I'm not either. Some good ones. There are definitely some good ones.
A lot of these people who analyze mechanics can also analyze other aspects of pitching. And, you know, I want to give those guys credit because – you know, they can do 1,500 words on, you know, his pitching mechanics as well as his stuff. And those guys should be, you know, we should applaud those guys. But there are a growing number of people who just analyze the mechanical side of pitching and assume that it carries more weight than it actually does. It's, right. And you're not also, as important.
And you're also not conducting a scientific research because you're going in it with a bias. That's the thing I feel about it. I feel like you're going into it saying, I'm going to watch this now and figure out what's wrong with them.
Right.
And that's, you can't do it that way.
Well, I mean, yeah, to that extent, I agree. I mean, when I'm at a game and I'm looking for a player, I sometimes do look for some negatives in his game, especially if I already have grades for him and I'm trying to.
Right. But you're going to look for positives too. You're going to go in with your needle in the middle.
Yes.
And you're willing to let your needle go left or right.
Oh, I'm always ready. I'm always ready to do that.
So, I think these guys are just want the needle to go in the bad way.
The bad part, the bad needle.
The bad needle. The one Lou Reed sang a lot about in the late 60s, early 70s.
Not a fan. That proves I'm not a hipster. I'm not a fan of Lou Reed.
No, see, that's the thing. You're the more modern hipster that's rejected any sort of punk or proto-punk, and you see the new melodic art school dropout music as the new punk.
Well, I mean, or art school graduate, as the case may be.
Exactly. But so we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about just some basic issues. We're going to talk about
Kevin's issues,
my issues, my personal issues. We'll talk about a piece.
Talk about mine too. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome. And
shout out.
We'll talk about
too soon.
Too soon. Wow. Too soon. Okay. A piece I wrote this week about Bryce Harper's leverage and is it big or is it small? That's just, you can just quote that alone. Big or is it small? We'll be playing. That's our game we'll be playing in episode 5. Is it big or is it small? I'm going to talk about some of the first place teams and how if I look at their pitching rotations, I have utterly no faith in them, including including the team you refer to as we.
I'm not going to disagree. I'm not going to. I mean, the Rangers do not have the pitching staff that other teams in the AL have. I mean, That's a fact.
Well, so we'll get deeper into that, and we'll bring in Colin and Tommy, talk more about – so we're going to bring in our favorite person in the world, not Jim Tracy.
Excellent.
He's also going to talk to us about umps and pop culture, all that good stuff, and we'll be right back. Microphone, strike it on with a microphone. Yeah, it's the type of shit you like to get with it. Such a beautiful beat, I'm about to Okay, welcome back. We're just going to go over some, I don't know what we're going to call this section. I think I call it deep thoughts, if you will. But, I mean, one thing, this came up in a couple times. Every time, we tend to record this on Thursday. It's actually Friday right now. But before we record, I actually do like a late night hit for KFNS in St. Louis. And it's always like one of my favorite radio interviews because it's not 30 seconds. We actually talk for like 20, 25 minutes because it's on in the middle of the night. And it's not like you know, you're on you do like a radio hit in New York. And it's really cool because you're going to be on New York and they go, and we welcome Kevin Goldstein. Kevin, what do you think about the Yankees? Well, I think they're pretty good. Do you think Jeter's good? I think Jeter's great. Thanks a lot for coming on. You know, and that's the whole thing. So we actually talk. And one thing that came up was just teams that are in first place right now. And do you believe? And the two teams that I have the biggest problems with right now are Texas and San Diego, and Minnesota to a lesser extent, in that I look at their rotations and they scare the hell out of me if I was a fan of said team. And I mean, if you start with the Rangers, Derek Collins pitched well since he came back up, but the rest of that rotation, you know, Feldman I thought was a fluke last year and he's pitching like a fluke this year. Rich Harden has been bad, and you know he's going to get hurt. And I have problems thinking Colby Lewis and C.J. Wilson are going to keep this up. Now, you are a Rangers fan, and you're probably going to do something stupid and call them we right now. But
it's possible. I don't like
predictable. Do you see that problem that I'm seeing, or am I overreacting?
I see the problem when you look at the overall league. I don't see the problem in the West. I think that the Rangers have the best team in the West. I think that, you know, people should have some concern about Colby Lewis because he's pitched in Japan, and you know, it's hard to tell how he's going to do the rest of the year. I think he's looked good. He's missing bats. He's pitching deep into games, and I think that that's all you can ask of a guy like that. I think he's a good 2-3 type on a, you know, second tier team. Still a team that can win the West. C.J. Wilson's an interesting situation because he's been averaging in the 70s innings pitched per season, and it's hard to tell what he's going to look like when he's trying to pitch deep into games in the Texas heat in late summer when the Rangers will need him to be the number two pitcher and possibly the number one guy. Because Harden hasn't looked like the pitcher that the Rangers thought they were going to get. Now, you know, all is not lost because, you know, Derek Holland could be that ace in the hole. And I'm not saying he's an ace, so everyone can calm down. He could be the type of guy that comes up and he has a really, really, really strong, you know, second half of the season. And he's already looked good in the few starts he's had. You have guys on the farm who can contribute both in the pen, making the guys in the rotation not have to carry so much of the weight with Sheppers, Ogando, Strope, Neftali Feliz. It's a strong pen, and it's just going to get stronger.
Yeah, the bullpen could be ridiculous. I mean, the bullpen could have four guys with closer-level stuff.
Absolutely. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off the guys like Lewis or Wilson who might tire as this season or become a little less effective as the season goes on. Well, you don't have to get the 7 and 8 innings out of them. You know, getting 5 or 6 innings out of them, giving up 2 or 3 runs is sufficient, especially if the bats start, you know, heating up for the Rangers. So I don't have as much concern as you do. I wouldn't compare them to San Diego. I'm not saying you did. I don't think that they're a paper champ, basically. I don't think that San Diego is a first place team, and their rotation certainly doesn't suggest that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think maybe the one thing favoring the Rangers over these other teams is just the fact that they're in the West.
Right. I mean, it helps. If they're in the East, they're the fourth best team, maybe the fifth best team. I mean, it's Boston has, you know, they're third place in the East, and you know, I think that you can make a case that they have the second or third best rotation in baseball.
And yeah, I mean, I think Boston's probably the third best team in baseball right now.
So I think that the West favors Texas quite a bit. I think that being in the West in the National League, I think that San Diego is going to get swallowed up.
Yeah, I mean, look, John Garland is not going to have a 2.10 ERA for the rest of the year.
No.
There's just no way it's going to happen. I mean, he's not striking anyone out. He's actually walking a decent amount of guys. His strikeout-to-walk ratio is 38 to 29. You can't do that and have a 2.10 ERA. It's just not possible. Clayton right. Richards is not a 2.73 ERA guy. Matt Latos is real. And Wade
he's a good pitcher.
He's a great pitcher. And Wade LeBlanc is pitching over his head. And that's there's just no way that's going to stick. And I look at Minnesota, a team that you know a lot of people are talking about, maybe a Roy Oswalt deal there. But, you know, Liriano's been mostly good. He's had some bumps in the road. But, you know, Pavano's been bad. Slowey is what he is, a strike thrower. He gives up a ton of hits. He's basically, you know, our generation's Bob Tewksbury. And, you know, obviously guys like Blackburn and Baker aren't aces.
No.
You know, and so that's another not a great rotation for a first place team. And so, you know, we'll I don't know if it's going to last. I absolutely don't think the Padres are going to win the West.
No.
And, yeah, I think Minnesota in some ways is a lot like Texas. And in the sense that, you know, one of the things going for them is the weakness of their division.
And absolutely. I think that Texas stands a better chance of improving themselves from an internal
right.
In an internal way because of the depth of the farm system. And I think that, you know, people don't look at that enough, especially when it comes down to being able to make a deal for somebody. I know that the ownership situation may come into play there with not being able to add enough salary. I can't speak on that, but they do have the players on the farm to augment the major league team as the summer goes on. I mean, we're not even talking about a guy like Tommy Hunter, who is, you know, not an exceptional pitcher, but he's a guy that can, you know, log innings at either the back of a rotation or be a very, you know, good contributor in the major league pen, and he's not even up yet. So the Rangers, I think the pitching staff is a little bit better than people think, but it's not nearly good enough to compete with teams like Tampa, New York, or Boston.
Well, this takes us to another question, and I was having this conversation with someone else, which is if you're Texas, let's go back 2 years to that Rays team that went from, you know, perennial losers to first place. And in July, they didn't do anything. They made no trades.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of stuck to the master plan, if you will, in order to, you know, win long term as opposed to making a real run right now. And they still got the World Series, so yeah, they did the right thing, but they lost no talent in doing that. They didn't trade away a single guy who was going to be important to them in the future in order to do something in 2008. I mean, if you're Texas, if you make a move, it's probably going to be for a playoff run because, like you said, you got to be fairly comfortable with them in the West. So, I mean, should they do that or should they stick to the master plan?
I think you have to stick to the plan to a certain extent. I don't think – I mean, I don't want to – you know, obviously I'm not the one making the decisions, but I wouldn't push in here because I don't think you have a team to push in yet. I think you have a team that can win the West. I don't think you have a team that can win the American League. And
– Right.
Unless some sort of crazy, you know, arbitrage situation becomes available and that you can trade, you know, for – a legitimate top of the rotation starter or a, you know, an important bat in the lineup. I don't see why you would trade a Martin Perez or somebody of that ilk to lose in the playoffs. I don't think that you need to do that yet. I think that you're building something that could be very special and could last a very long time. But you know, you do have the pieces to. You know, the farm system is so deep that you do have a chance to go out and get a player that you might need that's not, you know, you don't have to mortgage the farm for him. So right. I would be very hesitant to push in this season. But, you know, and I think it all just depends on what, you know, situations in front of you. I mean, if somebody is available and you think you can get him, and you think that player makes the difference in a series versus the Rays or the Yankees when it matters, you know, then you have to look at your team, and, you know, if you think you can do it, you push in. But I don't think that this team will.
That's fair. We kind of got off on a tangent, but that's okay. Another thing I want to talk about was just, and I got a lot of feedback on this piece I wrote this week about Bryce Harper's leverage. Of course he is.
Hater.
Of course, right.
You hate him.
I don't hate him.
You think he's a bad character guy? You think he's... Speaking of bad character guys, Gary Coleman died, and I think we should talk about that later, but that's another
That could
story.
Be our pop culture moment.
Okay, good.
And I don't hate him. I think there are questions about his makeup, but no questions again.
That you made up out of thin
You're
air.
Exactly right. That I made completely made up. No, yeah, it's interesting that the arguments against were quotes from the Nationals, who are going to pay him $10 million and his own coach. Good sources there, guys. But
all right.
Again, I never said the kid doesn't play hard. He does play hard and he works hard. There's just a certain arrogance there and a certain above it all attitude that turns some people off and is going to cause him to take some fastballs in the ribs if he doesn't calm it down. But I mean, he's your number one pick in the draft. There's no doubt about it. And, right. You know, historic talent. And, you know, there's been all this talk about his leverage, and his leverage is something we've never seen before in the sense that, you know, he's 17 years old. He's at a junior college. He can always go back to school and he can do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, but he's, why would he go back to school?
Yeah, that's what I can get this into. You know, the thinking is if he doesn't get the money he thinks he's going to get, and it's going to be more than what Steven Strasburg got last year when he broke every record. You know, Strasburg got 7.5 up front, total package, a little over 15. Mm-hmm. He's going to want more than that. And people are saying he's not going to get that. You really think Scott Boras is going to go backwards? I mean, come on. I mean, Scott Boras doesn't have that gear inside of him.
I think he is going to get that.
He's going to get more than that because, you know,
right.
Boras isn't talking about Steven Strasburg's deal. Boras is talking about Aroldis Chapman's deal because that's what ticked off Boras, because that proved his point that on the open market, this is what guys are worth. And so I think, you know, Boras is going to be looking for those kind of crazy dollars. And he's not going to take less. But the thought on the leverage, go back to that, is that, you know, if I don't sign, I'll just go back to school and I'll do it again. And then I'll be 18. You know what I mean?
Right. I'll go back to community college.
I'll go back to CSN and I'll be 18. And there, all of a sudden, that made perfect sense. But all of a sudden, there's a couple issues here when you take a step back. The first is...
It's not going to happen. That's the first.
He's going to sign. But the first thing is that... He's been so crazy good.
Right.
You know, I mean, if he just...
What's he going to get better?
Right. I mean, if he hit like 290 with 12 home runs, we'd still be talking about how amazing he is.
Right.
But he's not hitting 290 with 12 home runs. He's hitting, you know, 450 with 29 home runs.
It's ridiculous.
Mostly with wood bats.
Yeah. It's a good sign.
Yeah. And then... So that's the... So he can't go back.
No.
And then next year, if he did that... Next year, he'd have no leverage, not right. because of his age, but because of the CBA, where next year is the last year of the draft under the current rules. And you know that they're going to negotiate some serious changes to the draft.
Right. I mean,
this is his last chance to make money.
Right. All points to him coming out.
Right.
He's going to sign. It's going to happen. That's the way it is. I mean, whoever says that, I mean, the leverage argument doesn't exist because... What, he doesn't really have leverage because they have leverage against him.
Well, no one has leverage against Scott Boras. I firmly believe that. He'll beat you every time.
Right, I mean, the thing is that you don't want to pass up on the talent, but then he's not going to go back to school.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
No, he's too good, and everybody knows he's too good, and therefore he's actually kind of worth the money.
And he wants to play baseball.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wants to play Major League Baseball. So he's going to sign. It's going to be for the most money ever, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun just over the last month and doing draft calls. You know, all the talk has slowly transferred from – it started off with will Washington take Harper at number one, right? And then the next step, about 6 weeks ago, it became, will Washington be able to sign Harper? And now over the past 3 weeks, it's now, well, how much money are they going to give him?
Right. Well, so, I mean,
you see progressions.
Right. I can actually see a case for, him not going number one, only because, the number floats and Washington can't pull the trigger on it.
First of all, Boris isn't going to float a number. But second of all, the biggest problem with that is just that there's no guy good enough at two to make the argument. They can't get away with it at this point. That they have no PR out to not take him.
So what's your guess on the number?
Again, last year Strasburg got 7.5.
And I think I remember talking to you about this last year, and you called 15.
I think I was going 18, if I remember right.
Were you going 18? All right. Well, you were close.
I'm
going
to go with a bonus of 8 to 9 and a total package of double that, so like 18 million.
Wow. That's a lot for a guy who you think is a really terrible person.
Hey, Barry Bonds made a lot of money.
That's right. He sure did. So, good call.
Yeah, that's great. So we'll take a break. We'll get more beverages. What are you drinking, Jason?
I'm drinking water. us hipsters and our water drinking.
Is it out of a bottle?
It was out of a bottle. Yeah. See? It was fizzy water. I like it.
So you paid a lot of money for your water.
Well, I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking tap water.
Right, I understand.
I'll drink tap water next time in order to have that kind of cred with you.
No, either way, I'm going to accuse you of being a hipster. Because, if you drink the bottle water, you're a hipster. And if you drink the tap water, you're a hipster because you're rejecting the bottle water.
Okay, I see.
You can't win here.
No, I won't try.
So we'll take a break and we'll come back and we're going to talk more about the whole umpire thing and bringing in robots to manage the strike zone.
Good.
M-A-H-O, metaphysical style, with the good day style,
hypothesis, scientific parabolas, my lyrical projectile puncture, chronical matter, bisected, injected reflections, computating thoughts, through tablet of RAM style. Stored in a floppy, T1 line connect, intersect, riding brain waves, like a silver surfer style. Wireless mode in hand, paraphrasing sandy swords, I get
Okay, welcome back. We're going to move on to our big issue, which is, again, an umpiring issue. And we talked about this a little earlier when we were talking about some of the stuff that happened this week with Carl Crawford and a little bit with some of the things that happened with the Box and Burley and Guillen. But we talked briefly about the concept of if we had the technology to do this, having an automatic strike zone that was out of the umpire's hand and in the hands of some sort of HAL 3000 type of thing. And joining us, I know I promised you other people, but we've had some scheduling conflicts. Like we said, we recording most of this on Friday instead of Thursday, and we're all still a little reeling over the death of Gary Coleman. But joining us also from Brooklyn, New York, is everybody's favorite person at Baseball Prospectus, Jay Jaffe. Jay, how
Hello.
Are you?
I'm good. Good. Despite the Gary Coleman news, I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, well we're going to try to get through this, everyone, so bear with us. So I found you because you've indicated to me that you are somewhat in favor of having some sort of automatic strike zone.
Yeah, I think really, especially when it comes to balls and strikes, and I don't know if we're actually there yet with the technology. I mean, as the Questech controversy from a few years ago has revealed, and as we see with the pitch effects data when we look at balls and strikes, I mean, I think what we're realizing is that umpires really do have very different strike zones, and we now have more digital evidence than ever that's the case. And really, I think when we look at all the problems that we have with umpiring on the field, I'm at least beginning to concede that we can probably take away the balls and strike calls if we can refine the technology just a little bit. As the Joe West controversy shows, I mean, some of these umpires are just way too big for their britches. I mean, there was a quote circulating a few days ago after this controversy broke, and it was from the great Bill Clem, who was probably the most famous umpire of all. He says, you know, the ideal game for an umpire is one where you know the people come away not knowing who the home plate umpire was. And you know, when it's a Joe West game, everybody knows who's umpiring it because he's going to put his stamp on it and try to be bigger than the game and outshine, you know, whomever with his, you know, personality and his comments after the game. I mean, he's the only umpire who has a publicist, for crying out loud. I just find that really reprehensible. All the mistakes that were made in the postseason last year kind of show that we need more, you know, more replay. And while I don't want replay to take over the game, I do think we could probably do away with the balls and strikes calling because there's just really no reason it should be as inconsistent as it is.
The umpire behavior, I'm totally with you on. I think it's ridiculous, and they try to make themselves the show. But the balls and strike thing, I would like to see a more consistent, if you will, strike zone and see one that's kind of enforced better. But I don't want to see it taken out of hands. And we were talking about this earlier, and I'll just, you know, bring you up to speed. I think it would change the game crazy dramatically. And I don't know if it would suddenly make hitters way better or pitchers way better. I'm not sure which. But I'm convinced one of those two scenarios would happen. And I'll tell you the thing I talked about earlier, which is I went to a game, a minor league game on Wednesday. And the guy pitching, it doesn't matter who he was. But he was pitching to a batter, and he went, fastball way outside, slider way outside, fastball way outside. And then a fastball that, certainly from my angle, seemed to have catched the outside part of the plate. And the umpire called it a ball. And the scout I was sitting with turned to me and said, you know, when he's that far outside, he's never going to get that pitch. And I was okay with that. And I know it's wrong.
Why is it wrong?
Well, I know technically it's wrong. I know technically that's a strike. That's what I'm saying. Mm. But I was okay with it being called a ball. Because I think that's kind of, as cliche as it sounds, part of the game.
Yeah, look, I mean, we all know, you know, about the great pitchers who could paint the corners and would get, you know, Tom Glavin getting those calls on the black and working his way to the Hall of Fame and the 300 win club because of it. I think that, while there's a certain element that would be lost, and I'm not sure that we're entirely there yet with in terms of the technology to make this a reality, say starting, you know, in 2011. But I think what's going on here is that the home plate umpire is probably in the worst position of anybody to be calling balls and strikes. I mean, you look at the angle he has. I mean, he's obstructed by the catcher and by the batter. He can't actually see where the ball crosses the plate. It's mostly guesswork. And I mean, as we see, after, you know, on replays time after time, he's just not in the best position to call the strike. I mean, it would almost make more sense for the second base umpire to be calling balls and strikes because he can at least see where the ball goes over the plate.
Yeah, that makes that actually makes a surprising amount of sense.
It does, but you know what that does is it keeps the human element involved, and I'm just not sure that, you know, removing that is good for the game. I mean, if you're going to if the strike zone is a problem or if umps are a problem, you know, how about just more regulation when it comes to monitoring the umpire's, you know, performance or, you know, punitive damage if an umpire is consistently the problem or if he becomes bigger than the game itself. I mean, I think that at least keeps the human element involved and allows some sort of regulation.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, I think that there's a problem there. First of all, the umpires union is fairly powerful and you know, start with the fact that the current president of the umpires, I guess it's called the World Umpires Association now, if I'm not mistaken, is Joe West. All this stuff is going to have to be collectively bargained, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, meeting out discipline and stuff like that isn't just something that's going to happen unilaterally. And it gets right to the problem of, you know, how you implement these changes in the game. And I don't know that there's a really great answer for it. And after seeing some of the stupid mistakes that umpires made last fall, like Tim McClelland at the Jorge Posada on third base against the Twins and stuff like that. I'm not sure there's really anything to be said for the human element when it comes to umpire. I mean, yeah, umpires make mistakes. Yes, replays often show that umpires do get a majority of the call, you know, a great majority, like, you know, not high 90-something percentile of the plays right. But I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty, I think, that we could remove with, you know, by expanding replay and by introducing more technology into some of these things. I just don't think that the human element is something that needs to be, you know, hung on to just for the sake of that's the way we've always done it.
But does the, I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Where if we did this somehow, let's just say we had the technology and we had some sort of laser beam strike zone.
Sure.
You know, and the ball went through and something automatic would say ball or strike.
It's going to change things. It's absolutely going to change things. And you can't just implement it in, you know, Major League Baseball on opening day and expect that it's all going to be flawless. This is something that needs to be tested in the minors, you know, some faraway independent league or something like that. So, you know, we can get an idea of what the consequences are. I don't know. Maybe it's a horrible idea if it's actually implemented. I do think it's worth thinking about and worth exploring, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. My fear is that the change would be dramatic. I mean, like a run a game one way or the other. I'm not even sure which. And that some players would swing even more one way or the other to becoming great players or way worse players. And much better hitters or much better pitchers or much worse hitters or much worse pitchers.
Well, you know, you look at the way that the rules have evolved over the course of baseball history. I mean, you know, the disadvantages that hitters were under in the 60s and you know, the pitchers had when the mound was higher and things like that. I mean, rules change, people evolve. I certainly don't want to see any player get screwed out of, you know, their development, you know, with implementing some kind of technological change. But I do think players, you know, they can adapt and they will adapt in time.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that, you know, Jason, actually you brought this up, so I'm going to let you about a player's development and working, how that's actually part of a player's development.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think, I mean, you see sometimes like, oh, well, you know, this player was getting squeezed all game, and it's like, you know, I'm actually for a player getting squeezed all game, and it's in the minors, because I think it really helps them work with adjustments, work within a given game. You know, this is also why I was saying I'm probably a hypocrite, because I think that an inconsistent strike zone within a game is maddening, and it kind of works against that. But, you know, I think that, you know, in my opinion, one of the most important aspect of minor league pitching is the development of fastball command and how everything will play off that. And I think that when you're getting squeezed or whatever it is, and, you know, the strike zone is a little wider, a little smaller, whatever it happens to be, you need to learn to work within the scope that you're given. And, you know, I think that that's a good thing for development. What I think is a bad thing is an inconsistent strike zone within a game. And, you know, that does make me a hypocrite, I guess. But I don't know if there's a right answer here. Like Jay was saying, it's a complicated issue, and regardless of what you do, you are going to upset people. Whether you do nothing, whether you try to implement some sort of computerized pitch calling device.
There's been some reports today that Joe West got fined.
Yeah, I think there was definitely you know, mentions in the news that he was going to at least be disciplined or fined or suspended or both, and you know, the umpires union is generally pretty quiet about that stuff. Major League Baseball is generally pretty quiet about that stuff. I mean, you know, Joe West with his publicist, probably not going to be quite so quiet about it if it happens. But who knows? I mean, I guess obviously if we see him, you know, not assigned to a certain series or whatever for, you know, for a period of time, it'll be apparent that he, you know, that he was actually, you know, taken out of rotation or something.
I think that's actually in their collective bargaining agreement, that any sort of punishment or discipline stays private.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, which just goes to show you just how outside the lines Joe West is coloring right now. I mean, he's just, you know, blathering on and on, making his opinions, you know, the story rather than the game. And if he expects to be treated, you know, fairly, you know, he's probably going to have to shut his mouth and take his medicine, I guess.
So ultimately, if someone came around and said, I have this proven technology and we install a laser here, a laser here, a laser there, no one sees anything, and it automatically calls a ball and a strike, you'd say, let's look into this and do it.
I'd say let's explore it. Absolutely. I wouldn't say let's implement it today without testing it, but I'd certainly like to see what comes of it.
How about if it was already tested? The guy guaranteed 100% accuracy.
Yeah, sure. I'd be for it. I think, I think the umpires have a very difficult job that I think for the most part they do a very good job with. I mean, the calls on the base paths I think are generally very good. You know, maybe reassign this ump, you know, and have one more set of eyes on the field to watch the foul lines and things like that. You're not taking away anybody's job. You know, you can improve umpiring elsewhere if you just relieve them of the strike zone situation. So, you know, I'd like to see what happens with that.
How about a robotic Joe West that still argued with people?
Even better. Can he fire missiles at players?
Now that would change the game dramatically.
Yeah.
Okay, he could light the outfield on fire.
We'd really be bringing baseball in the 21st century.
How about a robotic Gary Coleman that calls balls?
No, that's too soon.
Ouch.
Oh, well, thanks for joining us, Jay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you, I'm sure, another time about something else.
All right.
Who knows what?
I'll be here.
Okay, thanks. Welcome back once again. This week, we are honored to have with us not Jim Tracy, who can answer one question for us. Not Jim, we've talked a lot about umpires this week and some of the problems Carl Crawford had, some of the problems Mark Burley and Ozzie Guillen had, and then a longer discussion about taking the strike zone away from umpires and having something computerized or something that's automatic and calls it perfect every time. Yeah, I'm sure you've had your fair share of run-ins with umpires, your fair share of problems with umpires, and I'm sure there's some you admire. What are your thoughts on the future of umpiring?
Well, when you talk about the umpires, Goldie, you're talking about the men in blue, and when I think of the men in blue, I think of the 2004 National League West champion Los Angeles Dodgers of Los Angeles. But getting back to the umpires, of course, also known as the arbitrators, an arbitration process comes every winter. Makes me think of the Super Twos and people like Steven Strasburg, who will be a Super Two, perhaps, unless the Nationals don't bring him up until June 4th. But getting back to the umpires, you have to have umpires to restore order, to keep order, and rehearse and re-rehearse the calls that they will make to determine the outcome of baseball games on the field of baseball play.
But thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
You're quite welcome. And if you can put in your show that I invented Eric Gagne, I'd appreciate it.
We'll call this the Invented Eric Gagne Minute. And again, that's not Jim Tracy. If you have any questions for Jim in the future, you can send them to podcast@baseballperspectives.com, and we will be right back.
Holy calamity, scream insanity. All of you other bullabies, another great fantasy. Wait!
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. We're done talking about baseball and umpires for a while, and we're going to move on to how we tend to end the show, which is a non-baseball thing, a little pop culture moment. We were going to talk about some music or a movie, but instead we have breaking news this week, of course, with the death of Gary Coleman. And Jason, you seem affected by that.
It's tough. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me because – you know, I mean, he was a cultural icon, and, you know, many people will be affected by this. I'm hurt. I didn't care about Dana Plato. I'm glad she's gone. I didn't like Todd Bridges, you know. I liked Gary Coleman. I liked when he hung out with Mr. T, Nancy Reagan. In fact, the Nancy Reagan drug episode, if you haven't already seen it, is the finest Different Strokes album. All right, Different Strokes episodes of all time.
It's one of the best ever of any show.
It's so ridiculous. And Gary Coleman steals the show, of course. But Gary Coleman passes May the 28th, 2010. And it's sad.
And if you're
I feel a little emotional.
Right, and if you're not old like me or kind of old like you, you don't remember the show.
I'm 32.
Right.
So let's just get this out. I'm 32. Not old. Young. Spry.
I mean, the show was sad. Everybody watched the show. You know, at least all the kids watched the show. It was a top 20 show during the late 70s, early 80s, before a show decline, if you will.
It was my life.
It was a big show.
Conrad Bain? My God, I wanted him to be my father.
It was awesome because, yeah, I mean, Gary Coleman and Todd Bridges played a pair of you know, young African-Americans from the bad part of town who
were saved by an old rich white guy.
Kind
of interesting. Right. Nobody seemed to want to talk about that.
So they're saved by this old rich white guy, and they live in this palatial estate, and hijinks begin from there.
Right.
But
first they call him Mr. They won't refer to him as Dad, and he's
Mr. Willis.
Or Mr. Drummond.
Or Mr. Drummond, rather, yes.
Which is actually the name of one of my cats. So I'm really affected by this, and I'm not making that up.
I know you're not.
Alan Thicke wrote this theme song, which, you know, just warms my heart.
That's a great little known fact.
Right. But Gary Coleman, he became the 80s.
He transcended the show.
You know, he proved that you could be a borderline midget. Was he a midget? I think he might have been a midget.
He was 4'8". I believe he's a... I don't know.
Little person.
I don't know what the line is.
Maybe it's 4'8".
But he was 4'8".
Okay, well, he showed that you could be 4'8", and, you know, he paved the way for, you know, the Emmanuel Lewis's of the world so that they could hang out with the Michael Jacksons.
Right, that's a good point. Gary Coleman did transcend the show. That's how big Gary Coleman was, is that...
He was not just 4'8".
He was bigger than that. Other networks began to look for small, cute black children to put on TV shows. Because they were like, we need us one of them.
We need more of this.
Right. I mean, it turned into, you got copycats. The other networks went, I need one of those things. And they found Emmanuel Lewis, who was another small black kid who had some sort of diseases that made him small.
Was Gary Coleman, did he have a disease?
Yeah.
Or was he just small?
No, no.
He had a disease.
Yeah.
So you had to be diseased.
That was the thing. I mean, Gary Coleman had like two kidney transplants before he was even on the show, I think.
Okay, that's right. I mean, I knew he was sickly. I didn't know if he had a disease. I guess I just looked at him as the perfect being.
Well, looking at Wikipedia, if I may read from Wikipedia, he suffered from a congenital kidney disease caused by focal segmental glomerulosclerosis, which halted his growth at an early age,
leading to a small stature, which he was not of small stature.
Right, he was of massive stature. He was on the cover of People magazine. Everyone knew who Gary Coleman was. He was a huge, massive star.
He was having sex with supermodels.
I don't know if that's true. I don't think that's true.
Well, I think it's true. I want to believe that's
true. It's not, because I remember him on Howard Stern. He was a virgin for a long time.
I don't believe that.
No, believe it.
You know, in this picture on Wikipedia, he's wearing a denim jacket, which is also cool.
If you're going for that Brooklyn hipster thing.
Well, right. I don't have one.
I don't believe that for a second.
I bet you have one. You know what? Let's jump in here real quick.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me what you were drinking last night?
I was drinking a Mike's Hard Cranberry Lemonade.
That's just fucking sad.
Why?
Come on, man.
No, I want to know why.
Because you claim to have taste. That stuff is crap. It's syrupy, mm-hmm. It's thick, mm-hmm. It's crap. It's synthetic, man.
You can sound like more of a hipster right now. I'll tell you something.
Well, because I don't drink Mike's Hard Lemonade?
Does
that make you a hipster?
No, I'm not like crazy about it. But I did enjoy it. I'll admit it, I enjoyed it. And here's the thing. I'll let you in a little story. A couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I went with the family to a Mexican restaurant here in town.
This is before Gary Coleman died, by the way. This is
before Gary Coleman died. I don't know if we could have went had we known. And, you know, and I live in DeKalb, Illinois, so I'm not going to get the kind of quality Mexican food you're used to. And they're not going to serve me a Café de Olla. But
you don't even know what that is, and you don't know how to order it. You have to be with the people.
No, exactly. So I'm not going to get that there. But it's solid American Mexican restaurant food, okay? And before that, the waitress asked if we'd like a beverage. And I got, just so you know, a frozen strawberry margarita.
Probably from a machine. Probably.
I'm sure it was. Positive it was, actually. And you know what? I was praised for it by my girlfriend. That I'm comfortable enough with who I am, with my status as a man,
to let your taste level
this big ass pink drink in front of me.
The color doesn't bother me. I mean, I don't have a problem with a colored beverage. I have a problem with, you know, beverages that come from a machine like that.
You've got to remember where I live.
I do understand.
I'm in DeKalb, Illinois. Understand.
And you hate that town.
I don't at all, actually.
Wearing your fedora.
It's the shirt versus hat thing. I get it. I don't hate this town, actually. I really don't. But, you know, you got to understand the limitations, which is you're not going to get a great restaurant.
And they all the stores, they only sell Mike's Hard Lemonade, apparently.
There's nothing wrong with Mike's Hard Lemonade. I'm not saying it's some sort of...
Are you sponsored by them? And I don't know...
If the Mike's Hard Lemonade people are listening, podcast@baseballperspectus.com for advertising opportunities. It was not my choice, but it was hot out, and I was in a liquor store, and I saw it, and I bought it. I paid for it. I bought it. I chose it. It's not like it was in the fridge by accident. It's not like someone brought it over. It's not like Margaret came home with it. I purchased the product and put it in my fridge, and I enjoyed it, and I do it without guilt.
Well, I'll applaud that.
Are we done with Gary Coleman?
Well, I'm never going to be done with it, Gary. I'm okay right now. I mean, I'm a little emotional. I had some other things going on, and now I'm really emotional because of Gary Coleman's passing.
Well, it's important to note that there's a special section on Wikipedia about different strokes, just about very special episodes.
Yeah, we should go over.
Let's go over them. Let's go over real quick. Again, if you didn't watch Different Strokes when you were a kid, you were just so not a hipster.
You just weren't. You weren't a very good person.
You weren't alive. Every kid watched Different Strokes.
You were a liar if you weren't seeing it. Exactly. I mean, because it was that good.
So their most notable was the one we talked about, the anti-drug episode, known as The Reporter. That was a season 5 episode, if you're buying the DVDs. And that had Nancy Reagan, and it basically was kind of part of her national Just Say No campaign.
Right.
It is a magical episode and a laugh riot. The second most known episode.
Please go to, the child molester episode,
Guest starring Gordon Jump.
Yes. It's awesome.
And Gordon Jump, of course, of WKRP fame, playing a pedophile bicycle shop owner who attempts to sexually molest Arnold and his friend Dudley.
Dudley was incredible.
And Dudley was a good character, right. So you learned. There was the Danger of Hitchhiking episode.
There was the Don't Smoke episode when Dudley's father tells him that he has cancer in the lungs. That was just... so riveting and hard hitting.
There's just so much going on. It was an amazing show. There's shows. There's the epileptic seizure episode.
Oh my god. Classic.
Where they learned
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali episode. You learned a lot from this show. It changed kids' life. It changed people's lives. It made us a better country. And so Gary, rest in peace, and
take care, Gary.
We do love you. So let's go back to, without finish things up, about what's going on this coming week. Of course, just looking at the calendar, I'm entering the draft bunker. And so lots of calls with teams and trying to figure things out. I'll probably do a mock draft at some point during the week, and then obviously one right before the draft, and talking about tools in the draft and some of the best pitching prospects and good stuff like that. And you, since you're back in the Estados Unidos,
see?
You're going to watch baseball and follow your assignment, which is to watch Vin Scully.
Right, I am going to do that. I'm also going to finish the OFP scouting series that I've been doing on the highest ceilings in the Rangers system. I am now within the top 10, and I will be getting to number 9 sometime in the next few days, and steady stream after that until I'm done.
And where can people find those, Jason?
They can find it at bbtia.com.
Which is the
you can also
stands for?
Baseball Time in Arlington.
There you go.
You can also call me at home, and I will whisper the reports to you.
Well, who is number 9, just so we can know? Can you tease us and let us know who 9
no,
is?
No, I can't.
Wow. Not even a special for – come on. We're like at the end of a podcast, well over an hour long. 7 people are going to hear this. Who's number 9?
Alexi Ogando.
See? Now, do you feel better?
Well, I don't, because Gary Coleman is still dead.
I think Alexi Ogando could be the next Gary Coleman.
Yes, he could.
So, well, I think we're done here. You got anything else?
I don't have anything else to say.
Story of your life.
That's right. Story of my life right now.
Too soon?
yeah, maybe we can get into that next week.
Sounds good. So,
my Jason sounds sad.
That's episode 3. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to everyone who emailed us, everyone who tweeted about the podcast or shared it with others, everyone in the Midwest League who listened to it. And we'll be back next week with more stuff. And you're going to talk about we'll talk about baseball, and Jason's going to talk about why Frank Zappa is underrated.
Yes, I can't wait to get into that.
Say thanks to the internet, Jason.
Thanks.
Talk to you next week.
Look at this face. What do you see? Look at it, Dad. What do you see? What do you see? Say it. Say it.
Well, it's a face.
Yeah, but what kind of face?
Pale, pasty, psychotic.
No, Dad. It's a neatly chiseled, well-groomed, drop-dead, handsome face.
Sparkles. Professional male model. Professional male model.
You must be another handsome boy graduate.
Oh my God, they're gorgeous.
You must be another handsome boy graduate.
Oh my God, they're gorgeous.
You must be another handsome boy graduate. You must be another handsome boy graduate. You must be another handsome boy graduate. You must be another handsome boy graduate.
I'm gonna become a male model. I'm like a rough diamond that just needs a little polishing, that's all. And that's exactly what handsome boy modeling school is going to do for me.
Oh my God, they're gorgeous.
You must be another handsome boy graduate. You must be another handsome boy graduate.
Handsome boy modeling school wants handsome fellas to train to become successful male models. Bring your beautiful face and a check for $60.
Oh my God, they're gorgeous.
You must be another handsome boy graduate.
Oh my God, they're gorgeous.
You must be another handsome boy graduate.
Oh my God, they're gorgeous.